What's up, people? This episode is sponsored by Lasia Rivers Harry, nutritionist, chemical engineer, and director of Nutrition is Medicine, a nutrition online business specializing in microbiome and nutrigenomic testing, consulting, nutrition plans, and the NIM Learning Hub membership. Lasia believes gut health and the interaction of key genes is fundamental to the root cause of health issues and resolving those issues. Lasia is offering all Primodcast subscribers and listeners 10% off all microbiome and gene testing packages. Get on it, people. Simply add Primod at checkout and the discount will apply. I'll attach a link in the description of this podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting from Sydney, Australia. This is the Primodcast. Independent, unfiltered, and uncensored. Beginning in 3, 2, 1.
Senator, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back, Chris.
So I'm trying to kind of a little giggle. We had a bit of a giggle before we jumped on here about a video.
What an insane planet we've got.
Absolutely mad.
Oh, sorry. The people who try to control it, they're insane.
Yeah, that's right. Fact
checkers. But good fact on you checkers. For standing up.
Oh, mate, it gets more insane by the day anyway. So, look, thanks for joining me again. I have actually put a few polls out about this episode to see what people wanted to know and sort of what questions people had. So the main reason why I got you on here today, as I said to you before, is that you're very well versed when it comes to the climate change debate, agenda, whatever you want to call it. And there doesn't seem to be much, I guess, very similar to what we've seen with COVID. There doesn't seem to be much opposition to the agenda. And if there is opposition, it tends to get silenced. So what I thought I would do was invite you, obviously, and Adam Bandt, the leader of the Greens Party, onto the show to have an open debate where there's no Channel 7, no Channel 9, hand-picking questions for him. I just wanted an open, transparent debate. You agreed, which I knew you would, but I never got a response from Adam. So we're doing it without him, but that's okay. I've got the questions I have. So, look, you've been speaking about the climate argument now for a while. So you've had a bit of experience with it. I think you said something to do with, was it university or something you've studied in the past
What the argument is, their argument, the climate alarmists, they're saying that the burning of hydrocarbon fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, is causing catastrophic global warming, and it's going to destroy the planet and freeze us and fry us and all everything. You know, the storms are going to increase. So let's just have a look at the basic message. Hydrocarbon fuels contain atoms of hydrogen and atoms of carbon, hydrocarbon. Mm. And when they're burned in oxygen in the air, they use the oxygen. So the hydrogen atoms react with the oxygen atoms to form H2O, which is water.
Yeah, water.
And the carbon atoms react with the with the oxygen to form CO2, which is carbon dioxide. You know, to be perfectly clear and complete, sometimes if it's not burnt properly, you'll get carbon monoxide, CO. That's one carbon and one oxygen, carbon monoxide. And that's a toxic poison. But that's not what their issue is. If you burn it efficiently, you get very little carbon monoxide. So, but still don't put the exhaust from your car into your car because you'll kill yourself. That's carbon monoxide. But the majority of gas that comes out is carbon dioxide and water vapor. Now, then when you find hydrocarbon fuels, they're found in nature as coal, oil, and natural gas. They have impurities because of the way they were formed in nature, right? They were laid down millions of years ago, hundreds of millions of years ago. So you might have sulfur in it. You might have other elements in it. And when you burn sulfur in oxygen, you get sulfur dioxide, which is a pollutant. You might get nitrous oxides, which are pollutants. You might get particulates, which are pieces of soot, basically. They're pollutants. That's what used to cause the smoke. You'll notice these days in most cities, they don't have much smoke anymore. That's because the particulates get scrubbed out at the power station. the sulfur dioxide gets scrubbed out at the power station. The nitrous oxides get scrubbed out. So you basically got, that's why these days at a coal-fired power station or a gas-fired power station, you'll see a chimney with nothing coming out of it because water vapor is invisible except on a cold day when it forms steam, and carbon dioxide is always invisible. So that's what they're saying, is that the carbon dioxide, which is coming out of smokestacks, coming out of industries, coming out of power stations, coming out of cars, coming out of cows farting, cows belching, coming out of your nose right now, because your carbon dioxide, the air has 0.04%, right? It's got bugger all of it. That's enough to keep our plants alive. But when you exhale, because you're a factory as well, when you take in your oxygen and you mix it with the carbon and hydrogen in your food, then you get same thing, water vapor and carbon dioxide coming out. So what you've done is you've taken in carbon dioxide at 0.04% and you've put it out at 5%, which is more than 100 times, 125 times, whatever it is, higher. So you're polluting right now, Chris. You know, we've got to kill you. Well, we've got to tax you, rather. So that's what they're about. They're about limiting the carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide is in everything. And so they can tax almost everything. And when I said to you a minute ago about you're breathing out carbon dioxide, there is a consultant who did some work in London for Tony Blair's office. They were asked to assess the feasibility of taxing people for the breath they're exhaling.
That's insane.
So I'm only a little guy. Maybe I'm producing less carbon dioxide because I'm more efficient than you as a big fella. So you'll have to pay more than I will. How can you do that? You know, and so, I mean, that's what they're after. They're after control of our energy and control of our food and control of our agriculture. That's it.
So when you have people like the Greens Party, obviously the more, in terms of that space, they're definitely the more dominant with what they're saying. Now, how do they know, this is the question, not just them, but everyone in general that are pushing for this, how do they know that carbon is causing climate change? Look, how do they know that? Like, are they referring to a specific type of literature or where are they getting that information from? Well, who's telling them it's bad?
Okay, so the first thing is, I have challenged Senator Larissa Waters, who's the leader of the Greens in the Senate, to a debate on the science behind climate science and the corruption of that science. I challenged her when we were both on the stage in a forum. We were both on a four-person panel, right? On October the 7th, I think it was, a Thursday, October the 7th, 2010. Wow. She jumped to her feet the moment I challenged her. She jumped to her feet and said, I will not debate you. At the end of the forum, I was the last one to speak in answering questions. I turned and walked back towards her just to get to my chair. She jumped and said, I will not debate you again, just to make it clear. I challenged her again in the 2016 election campaign in May. I challenged her and also Mark Butler, the Labor Party spokesman for climate change. They both said no. I've challenged Larissa Waters starting on the 9th of September, 2019. I said to her and to Dina Tally, who was the leader of the Greens in the Senate at the time, that I challenge you to a debate and I challenge you to put forward your evidence for your claims about carbon dioxide from human activity affecting climate. They have never debated me. They've never put forward their evidence. That's the first thing I want to say. So they run from it. Now, what's their science based on? It's based on bullshit. There is no science at all that they have ever cited. What they do, Chris, is they say, we had a storm last night. That was due to mankind's climate change. Nothing different. They had hurricanes going to New York. That was due to climate change. Bullshit, because they've had hurricanes going tracking all the way to Canada. They know that from human civilization and developed when the United States was developed. We know that there's nothing unusual at all going on in the climate. But what they do is they say, They tell lies about the Barrier Reef. You've probably just seen the article that says the Barrier Reef's in fine shape. It's got record coral cover in the north and the south, the north and the central regions. And the south, they're only affected by crown of thorn starfish, which is entirely natural and cyclical. So there's nothing happening in the Barrier Reef. There's nothing happening with storm activity. It's no more frequent storms, no more severe storms. nothing happening with droughts. They're no more severe than in the past. The biggest drought we've had, most severe drought, was 1901 in our recorded history, and perhaps 1920s to 40s. There's nothing changing in snowfall. They just vary. And what they'll do is they'll pick a year or a month when we have an up, you know, when we have natural variation, and it's up. And they'll say, oh, this temperature's high. But they don't tell you when the temperature's low. So there's nothing. They've got no evidence. First of all, they have to prove that there's something. Remember, this is all based on global warming, unprecedented global warming. So what they have to do, first of all, is prove that the temperatures are unusually warm and continuing to rise. They're not. We've had 25 years. The most authoritative temperature record for the whole planet is NASA's satellites. And they're showing that since 1995, 27 years ago, if you remove the El Nino and La Nina cycles of temperature, the temperature has been flat globally. Flat. If you look at the temperature records for our country, the temperatures were warmer in the 1880s and 1890s. I said 1880s, 1890s than today. United States, it was warmer in the 1930s, 1940s than today. So they're fabricating this. They're just telling lies. And so what they use, though, is they make lies up about the Barrier Reef, about the polar bears, the pandas, the cuddly koalas, all the bullshit that they can come up with. There's nothing there that they have ever presented any evidence. It's based on nothing. It's based on just simply wanting to control the agenda, to control your energy, control your food, control your water. That's based, and control your property.
Now, I know obviously you can't speak.
Oh, and by the way, Chris, you mentioned the word carbon. It's not carbon, it's carbon dioxide. What they've done is they started with carbon dioxide from human activity, and then they very quickly converted it to carbon. And carbon, they did that because the old pollution was carbon when they had smoke particles coming out of the chimneys, right? And carbon is black, usually. Carbon is also diamonds, by the way. Carbon is also graphite, so pure carbon. Carbon in the smokestacks was a filthy pollutant. And that's what they're trying to conjure up, an image of a filthy pollutant. But carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. First of all, it's odorless, tasteless, colorless. It's non-toxic. And the second thing about it is it's entirely natural. Nature produces 32 times more every year than we do. Nature controls the level in the atmosphere. We've had two natural experiments. In 2008, we had the global financial crisis, which you'd remember. The following year, around the world, except for Australia, where we were exporting record amounts of minerals, we had a major recession in most countries. So when you have a major recession, you use less industrial fuels. So the use of hydrocarbon fuels, coal, oil, natural gas, decreased, which meant the amount of carbon dioxide that humans produced decreased. And we know that for a fact. And yet the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere continued increasing. In 2020, we had the almost depression around the world due to government restrictions, not due to COVID, due to government restrictions on COVID. And we had the same decrease in fuels, same decrease in human carbon dioxide, but the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere continued increasing. So what that tells you is that we do not control the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Nature does, nature alone. It produces 32 times more every year. We don't even know how much carbon dioxide is produced by nature. In some years, it's just phenomenal. It swamps human activity. But the second thing is nature alone controls the level, because there's more carbon dioxide in dissolved form in the oceans, 50 to 70 times more in the oceans than in the entire Earth's atmosphere. Slight changes in the sun's activity lead to slight changes in the ocean temperature, which lead to either carbon dioxide being absorbed or being expelled from the oceans. And so on a seasonal basis, you have this going on with carbon dioxide. And that's exactly what's showing what nature controls it. We also know the laws of chemistry, like Henry's law. Humans do not control and do not affect the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. If we shut down everything, all that would happen was nature would release a little bit more from the oceans to keep that balance. So we've had two experiments which prove that if we tax people, shut down industry, it won't matter a damn, because nature controls the level in the atmosphere. But it's very important to talk about carbon dioxide and human carbon dioxide. They've never been able to show any impact whatsoever from human carbon dioxide. The whole of these policies are built on bullshit. To have a good policy, what you need to do is you need to say, for every unit of carbon dioxide from human activity, it has this effect on temperature, this effect on snowfall, this effect on droughts, this effect on storms. They've never been able to specify that. If you haven't got that specific quantified effect, you can't make up a policy about what you'll do to cut it. And you can't cost the benefits. You can't cost the cost to industry. The cost to industry are huge. The cost of families is enormous. Yeah. And the cost to our inflation is stupendous, because electricity is used in everything. It's used in services, not just manufacturing and transport. So what's happening is we have gone ahead with a policy that has never, ever been specified. Never. And the other thing about it is that you can't, without that specific quantity of human carbon dioxide and its effect, you cannot tell how your policies are being effective or not. You just don't know how you're going. So it's based on bullshit. And it's based on an objective to take money out of your pocket and to control what you do, what you eat eventually, what energy you use, how you use it, what you spend your money on. That's all it is. It's a tax.
Well, you know what? I think one of the first times we had a conversation and we spoke about climate, and I hadn't really formed an opinion on it, simply because I'm aware that the climate changes, obviously, and it's always been that way. But I didn't have a look at, I'd looked into any deeper than that. So I didn't know if whether human caused climate change, you know, how much of a difference humans were making. I didn't look into any of that. But what I did notice is that not just in Australia, I mean, around the world, these climate policies that are ever being pushed through or even just spoken about all seem to have one thing in common: control. And that's where I thought, well, hold on a second, if this is going to impact my life and control us even more than we are at the moment, then I want to know why, show me why, justify it to me. You know, if they could prove that we are in fact causing it and there's going to be catastrophic and all the rest of it, and little koala bears and all that stuff, like they do, that's what they push through, I don't think any person would have a problem with that.
No, you're right.
But you're right. It's when they're just saying, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. You know, we have to do this. We need to sacrifice this. Because of this, I can have a look at, like, how are you coming to that conclusion? Oh, just don't worry about it. Like, everyone knows that's what's happening. That's all I keep hearing. And again, maybe it's due to the whole COVID scenario, where I've learned that if you get shut down from an alternative opinion to what's being pushed through the mainstream narrative, then you need to stop and think why, because the truth doesn't mind being debated at all. Lies do. And it's a very similar pattern as to what you're seeing with COVID, the vaccine, I guess, to an extent, and climate. They're all similar. And all three also to do with control, mandates, control. Yep. You know, and I mean, I did read the climate change bill that Labor have put through. I did have a read of that. There wasn't much detail in the way of how they're going to achieve that 43%. They just said, we're going to achieve 43% by 2030. That was it. So I think they need to be a lot more transparent with, okay, well, how do you think we're going to achieve that, and what does that mean for people like you and I? You know, is my cost of living going to get higher? What's going to? Yes. But there's none of that. It's just, this is what needs to happen. This is what's going to happen, and you can't ask questions because you get shut down. And that's why I wanted to speak to you about it, because I know that you have the information that a lot of people are looking for that they just can't find anywhere. And again, if you share something on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, whatever it is, the mainstream social media networks, the same thing happens as to what happened with COVID. They start giving you links. Oh, you spoke about climate. Well, here's a link to this agency. Here's a link to that agency. And if you say something that goes against that narrative, they'll flag your post for false information or misinformation. So, you know, and that's becoming more, I'm starting to see that a lot more in the past 6 months. As COVID sort of died down a little bit, you can see they're transitioning into climate.
Yeah, you're astute. Pardon? You're astute. In France, You're thinking. You're actually thinking, unlike most people. In France, they've had lockdowns due to heat waves, natural heat waves. They've had lockdowns. Don't leave your house because you could die. I'm serious. No, they're talking about lockdowns in other countries for similar things. I just mentioned a couple of things. First of all, you said, well, where's your evidence? Well, they haven't got any evidence. They're just talking about emotional stories, and they're actually telling lies. So when you want to question science is based upon hard evidence. That's the beauty of science. And that's what, when science started emerging a few hundred years ago, it ended, it put a real hole in people's attempts to control, the elite's attempts to control. Because instead of standing over you with financial power, instead of standing over you with economic power, instead of standing over you with military forces, with thugs, instead of standing over you with emotion, instead of standing over you with religion and fears of going to hell, people started saying, hang on, give me the basis. Where's the objective facts? And science is all about having hard empirical evidence. Empirical just means measured. And so that's what I've been using in the parliament ever since I got in 2016. When I first mentioned it, the journalists rushed off to get their dictionaries. You know, they didn't know that. But what, and people have been laughing at me at times and trying to ridicule, and that's what they do. And they've been saying, oh, where's your empirical evidence? Well, I've given them plenty. But the point is that people now know what empirical means, and it's hard data. But the second thing is that's not good enough. We had Emma Alberici on the ABC tell me, well, what more evidence do you need? We produced 50 billion gigatons of carbon dioxide last year around the planet. So what, Emma? So what? Because you've got to have the second part of the science, which is you've got to be able to prove cause and effect. So if you do this, this happens. If you do this, or if you see this effect, what caused it? This caused it. So you've got to have the cause and effect. So you've got to have the data, which makes it objective, within a scientific framework that proves logically, reasonably, with reasoning, that this is the effect. So that's the first thing. They've never provided any links to logical scientific points. Never. The second thing I'd mention to you is that the truth loves being debated, because you just said that. I agree with you entirely. And why does the truth love being debated? Because it reinforces itself. If it's not the truth, it's found out and it's no longer the truth. So, and the third thing I just mentioned is that this whole climate narrative is anti-environment, because if you look at the real pollutants, which I started talking about, the sulfur dioxide, the nitrous oxides, the particulates, in old power stations like they used to have in China 30 years ago, they'd be belching out these pollutants. And that's why you see haze in Beijing. It's not because of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is invisible. It's because of the old power stations were putting out carbon in the form of particulates, haze, smoke particles. And so what they were saying here was, don't burn our power here. Ship our manufacturing to China. So China was using real pollution, was producing real pollution. So they're actually increasing the pollution around the planet by shutting down us, where we had clean power stations that scrubbed out the particulates, scrubbed out the sulfur dioxide, scrubbed out the nitrous oxide, and just let carbon dioxide and water through. Harmless gases essential for all life on this planet. So it's anti-environment. The other thing, I don't deny that humans have an effect on climate. If you go into massive land clearing, you will affect the climate in that region. We do not have an effect on global climate. How do you affect the local climate? Well, you affect the local climate if you change the vegetation, you change the water vapor, you change the moisture in the air. So those are the things that do affect. So I'm not saying humans should just go and destroy the environment, but what you'll find is the carbon, the focus on climate change is causing serious consequences on the environment. If you look at the wind turbines they're putting up in the name of climate, they're chopping birds. If you look at this forest they clear for wind turbines, if you look at the solar panels, the agricultural land they're destroying, the forest they're clearing for solar panels. And these solar panels and wind turbines, they're hideous uses of resources. A wind for every unit of electricity that in a from a coal-fired power station, you need 35 tons of steel. For every unit, the same unit of electricity from a wind turbine, you need 546 tons of steel. How do you make steel? With carbon dioxide being produced. So these wind turbines, over the life of the wind turbine, produce more carbon dioxide than they save. Not that that matters, because carbon dioxide is harmless. But the point is, they use so much materials that that's why wind will never, ever compete with coal, nuclear, hydro, gas, oil. Never, because the amount of resources that they consumed are huge, so the cost is enormous. And that the energy density is so low that they produce so little energy that the cost per unit of energy is something like double what coal is. So what they're doing is they're driving our economy into a tailspin. They're inflating our economy. And what happens is we then subsidize the wind turbines and the solar panels because they can't stand on their own. We subsidize them. Who do we pay the subsidies to? The wind turbine and solar panel manufacturers, which are mostly in China. And then we subsidize the people who install them here in Australia, mostly foreign companies and some billionaires. And then we pay them subsidies to keep operating them because they can't compete with coal. And then what happens is that the price of normal electricity increases because of the subsidies. And we also then find they rig the system so that they're favored. And then that means the coal-fired power stations are uneconomical, even though they're actually half the price to produce. And so then coal starts dying. The next thing, they shut coal-fired power stations down, and you've got only high-cost components producing our electricity. We're buggered.
Yeah, it'll drive up the cost of everything, manufacturing, even our electricity bills. That's why we need to be asking more questions, because I don't think people realise that when Albanese got up and said that, you know, we're going to hit their 43% reduction. Okay, it sounds good, but how are you going to do that? And what does that mean? And that's what I really wanted to speak to you about as well, as to how these targets, climate targets, will impact everyday Australians in regards to, like, what can we see to go up in price? Obviously, we know electricity bills will go up, but what else can we see happening around the country the more they push this on?
Okay. Everything that uses steel and electricity will be increased in price, everything. So if you look at Adam Bandt showing signs that he's admitted defeat on one key part, coal is used to generate electricity. It's called thermal coal or steaming coal, right? It's fed into power stations to boil water, to drive the turbines, to turn the electricity generators. That creates steam. So it's called steaming coal or thermal coal. It's used to provide heat. Coal is also used to produce metallurgical coal in steel mills. In a steel mill, you need something that's got a lot of carbon in it. And when it's burned, it produces carbon dioxide. So they use coal because it's got the carbon. They also use coal because it's a solid material and they can blow the air through it, which reduces your iron oxide into iron. Then that forms your steel. They also use coal because there's carbon in coal that goes into your steel to make it a better quality steel. We produce some of the best quality steel in the world. And they also need it to support that whole mass because they put the iron ore on top, which is very heavy. And so you've got to support that mass so the air can get through it and do its job. So that means coal is absolutely essential for steel unless you get scrap steel and just melt it down. But then you need electricity anyway. So coal is needed for steel. Adam, and I've been telling people this for years, Adam Band in the election campaign suddenly admitted quietly, oh, we can't stop the production of steel. That's right. Steel is in trucks. It's in our food implements. You know, the plow the ground, we harvest the ground, we sow the ground, we harvest the ground, we truck it, we process it, we store it in fridges, we process it in factories that are full of stainless steel. Steel is in everything. It's in the goods. It's in the trucks that transport. So steel is in everything. And if it's not in everything, it's in the production of everything, because you need a steel truck or a steel implement or a steel scalpel or a steel implement. So steel is in everything. You make roads with steel. You make pipes with steel for water, bringing water in. You do everything with steel, either as a tool or as a raw material. But electricity, what they're trying to do there is say, let's cut our use of steaming coal to generate electricity and use wind turbines. Well, hello, what goes into making wind turbines? Steel. And there's 16 times as much steel in a bloody wind turbine unit of electricity than in a coal-fired power station producing electricity. So That's why wind and solar is so damn expensive, and battery cars are so expensive, because they're huge consumers of resources. We are increasing the footprint of humanity by using this bloody stuff. And we're increasing the toxic chemicals, because it's very difficult to get rid of batteries. They use very rare earths that are mined using toxic processes. So we're increasing the use of copper. So that means mining. We're increasing the use of rare earths, which means mining. We're actually increasing the use of mining to produce the rare earths and the other exotic metals and minerals that are needed for solar and for wind turbines and for the increased batteries. And yet you will never, ever produce enough electricity from these things, and you certainly cannot store it. So what they're trying to do is an absolute madness. But what's happening is that they will tax us all out of existence, and then they'll control us. And if you look at the United States, this is an example. You've heard of George Soros.
Yeah.
George Soros owns the Democratic Party. Obama was a president in the Democratic Party. George Soros said to Obama, negative messages on coal. Obama really ramped it up on coal. They shut down so many coal mines. The price of Peabody coal shares went from $1,100 to $15. That's a 98% reduction. Who bought the shares? Soros.
So I would say Soros, yeah.
Because the long-term predictions from most people are that the use of coal will increase dramatically in the future. That's the only way to get Africa and Asia up and running the same as we've had in our development industrially. So coal forecasts are huge. So he's now sitting pretty with Peabody Coal Company, the world's largest coal producer. That's what they're doing. And that's Soros has got a reputation for destroying whole countries, bringing them to their knees economically by manipulating the economy and then making a profit. That's what Soros does. He destroys to create wealth for Soros at the cost of billions of people's lives. So that's what we're facing here. We're facing control for lining billionaires' pockets. There are people in this country who are making money hand over fist. They're billionaires. You can't afford enormous solar complexes and wind turbine complexes, but they can. And what they do is they make money out of it by getting the subsidies. Warren Buffett, who's the most astute investor ever, he said, wind turbines, useless. Subsidized wind turbines, fabulous investment. It's the subsidies.
Yeah.
Government is now the largest transfer of wealth from the poor and from the middle class to the wealthy. And yeah, it's deliberate.
That's exactly what's happening at the moment. That's exactly what's happening. Correct. And you can see that. And I think there's actually a very good documentary I watched only the other day on Netflix called Capitalism, A Love Story. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Just in regards to how the system works, I mean, how the this was based in late 2000, when the America had their crisis, was it 2008, 2009?
Yeah, global financial crisis. They had it in 8, near the end of 8, and then they destroyed their economy in 9.
Yeah, with the bailout package and what happened with that, and the banks used it, and it was an absolute schmozzle. Deliberate, though, it was deliberate. Goldman Sachs, the Treasury Department of the US government, infiltrated by Goldman Sachs. It's what they do. That's what they do. You know, but unfortunately, they do it in such a way like what we're seeing now with climate. We see an issue, like the average person will see an issue of you know, climate, this is what needs to happen. But in the background, these people are making money hand over fist while it's costing you money. And it's going to get to the point now where it's not going to get better. The economy is not going to get better so long as they're pushing this 43% target that Labor pushed. So has that gone through? What's the status of that climate change bill?
It's gone through the lower house and it's gone to a committee in the Senate, and it'll probably come up in about 4 weeks' time in the Senate for voting there.
How do you think it'll go?
It'll pass for several reasons. First of all, Labor and the Greens, thanks to dopey Liberal recommendations on preferencing, Labor and the Greens together have 38 votes out of 76. They've got 50%. All the independents, One Nation, and the Liberal Nationals have 38, 50%. So it just needs one independent to cross, to go and join the Greens, and they've got it through. Now, David Pocock has said that he will support it. So David Pocock, he's a hell of a nice guy.
ACT, isn't he? I think that.
Correct. He's a hell of a nice guy. Sorry? Yeah, hey, very, very, very good rugby player. Real, real hard on him. He's fabulous rugby player. Very fit. I mean, the guy's built like an ox, and, you know, but he's lithe and agile. I mean, he's a magnificent specimen as a human in terms of physique. Very, very fit. Very, 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 very strong. He and Richie McCaw from the All Blacks revolutionized the way number sevens and number sixes play. You know, they're really very, very effective. Top player. But on science, complete ignorant. Completely ignorant. He stood up in the Senate the other day and said, well, I'm in for, and he's not a demonstrative guy. He's a nice personality. Hmm. He just said, I'm all for following the science like we did in COVID.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
Right. And he's been sold the pup on climate. He's drunk the Kool-Aid. And there's so many intelligent people like David who don't think. It's not intelligence that matters. It's the ability to think analytically. So, you know, the economy, if you look, Chris, we've been scratching around in the dirt as humans for thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years. Mm. We've been at the whim of every drought, every famine, and humans have been at the mercy of climate until we got hydrocarbon fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. And all of a sudden, in 170 years, we've now got these things. Mm. We've got so many things that 170 years ago when the Industrial Revolution started, we would not have dreamt where we are today. A person on welfare in this country lives better, longer, safer, easier, more comfortably than a king or queen did 200 years ago. Fact. Mm. They live much longer and easier and healthier. So that's been due to coal, oil, and natural gas. We used to cut down forests 170 years ago. To do our cooking, to provide our warmth, especially in Europe where you needed the warmth. Mm. We used to kill whales to produce our whale oil for lighting, for reading at night. Then we got gas lights. Then we got coal-fired power stations. Then we got electricity. Oil. Mm. All of a sudden, we don't have to burn the forest. So as a result of coal, oil, and natural gas, the area of forests in the developed countries has increased dramatically. Forests have increased because of coal, oil, and natural gas. The whales, we don't kill them anymore for whale oil, for lighting. The number of whales are now pretty secure. So coal, oil, and natural gas has been a huge driver of the environment, benefit for the environment. The other thing that happens is when you use coal, oil, and natural gas, you have a very high energy density fuel. When you have high energy density, you get high energy production for low cost. And when you decrease the cost of energy, you increase your productivity. If you can afford to use more energy, you become more productive. Think of all the energy you've got at home, your fridge, your stove, your dishwasher, your car. Your car is so much more efficient than a cycle. If you look at farmers, a farmer, each of us, we could go out and produce our own, till our own soil, right? Mm. But it's so energy intensive that when you get a farmer with a massive John Deere or Cat tractor, they produce far more than we could even dream of. So when you produce that high productivity, the cost per unit of your food, the cost per unit of all your services decreases dramatically. The single greatest thing the last 170 years of the Industrial Revolution has been human creativity, our heart and our minds, and sharing that. And that's why freedom is so important. But the second biggest thing, and easily the second biggest thing, is the relentless decreases in real costs of electricity and fuels. When you have decreases in fuels, you get greater use of fuels and you get greater productivity. When you have greater productivity, you have cheaper production, you have greater wealth, you have greater prosperity. And what's happened is we've now got greater prosperity. Except that in the last 3 years, that ever-decreasing price of electricity has been artificially increased. And Australia has gone from having the cheapest electricity in the world to now being amongst the most expensive. Our electricity prices have trebled. artificially. If we removed all the bullshit restrictions, we'd still be decreasing the real cost of electricity, but that's no longer the case. So we are reversing human progress. It's inhuman, it's unconscionable, and it's immoral, and it's all based on a lie. No science whatsoever drives this bullshit. And a criminal named Maurice Strong started this in 1980 when he started the scam of global warming. Criminal from the United Nations.
Yeah, that's I was watching a little, wasn't long, it was maybe 5 or 6 minute documentary on him. A few weeks ago. But I think, look, the people like Adam Bandt, the people like the independents that are, because a lot of climate activists got through independents at the election. What do those people gain from that? Obviously, they're not the ones that are going to be benefiting from extra control. Is it just a lack of, they're brainwashed? It has to be.
What they're benefiting from is increased representation in Parliament. The Greens have now got 2 senators from every state. They've got more clout in Parliament. They can now tell the government what to do. The Greens are completely ignorant. They have no idea of what we're talking about right now. They have no interest in what we're talking about right now. The Greens are hell-bound on control. If you look at the Greens, they supported injection mandates. They were speaking vigorously on injection mandates. They supported the invasion of the United States and NATO into the Ukrainian conflict. They support control everywhere if you look at the Greens. They want to increase regulation. They want to tell you how to live, what to do. The Greens are so damn arrogant and ignorant that they think they can ignore 4.5 billion years of evolution and tell us how the planet should evolve in the future. Now, you probably believe in evolution. I do. Our planet has come from being a ball of gases to being a solid planet. And then we had erosion on the planet due to water and air. And then we had life forms introduced to the planet. Then we had, that was single cell. And then we had complex animals, we had mammals, and then we had dinosaurs and then mammals, and then we had humans. And our ability as humans, completely different from any other animal species. We've got a neocortex that's wonderful. We then created all kinds of technological improvements. In just 170 years, we've just gone phenomenally well. What they're trying to say is how we should evolve in the future. They're playing God, Chris. They're trying to tell us how the planet will evolve. Forget your 4.5 billion years of evolution. This is what we're going to do in the future. Who do they think they are? They think they're God. So they're all about control. Now, what I said was all of the Greens are delusionary when it comes to science. They have no idea. They'll talk about the koalas being threatened. They'll talk about the Barrier Reef being threatened. They'll tell lies. They'll fabricate lies one after the other. And you can come in and give them evidence they don't do anything. But the other thing about the Greens is some of them are the foot soldiers for the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. The Yes. Greens is the policy introduction for the United Nations into this country. What they do is they bring in policies, they get the media through their stunts, and then the Labor Party starts adopting those policies, and you check. Then the Liberal Party says Labor Party is getting votes, so we need to put in those policies. And so the Greens bring in these policies, and they're doing it on behalf of the United Nations. But not most of the Greens wouldn't know what I was talking about there, just some of their leaders would know.
Yeah, talking about the Greens, that's why I was looking down. I've got to read this to you. It was a post I seen yesterday. I don't know if he put it out yesterday or it was just a post he's put out and someone took a screenshot of it. So it's Adam Bandt, Twitter. A bit hard for you to see through the thing there.
I can't see it there.
Yeah, you can't see it. So this is what he tweeted. Off subject, but I think you can see the mentality and what's going on there. He said, yearly reminder that drug dealers aren't to blame for your loved one's banned drug-related problems. Quite the opposite. Dealers often act as community elders, keeping an eye out for regulars and providing a stigma-free community connection point. What in the... I couldn't believe that. What is wrong with him?
Yeah.
What's wrong with him? He's not all there. He can't be. I couldn't believe that. It's one of the worst ones I've ever seen.
No, I can believe it. These people are inhuman. They're anti-human, mate. If you look at the Greens' policies, they're anti-education, anti-science, anti-environment. The impact, they tell you they're pro-environment, but the impact on the environment is horrendous. Anti-industry, anti-development, anti-Australian. They're anti-homosexual because they support Islam, and Islam wants to throw homosexuals off the bridges, off the roofs of buildings. They're anti-women, anti-families. I can make a solid case on all these things. The Greens, some of those are deliberate. Some of those are just through sheer ignorance. Oh, by the way, bringing up that thing about drugs, what's the difference between what do you call it, a drug pusher and Big Pharma?
No, what?
The drug pusher doesn't force you to use their drugs.
That's a fair point. They don't mandate it. That's right. Yeah. Oh, you know, I was only the other day, could you imagine how illegal a Pfizer vaccine would be if it was made by a Colombian drug cartel? Can you imagine?
Yep.
It's crazy. But I could not believe that when I read that. He says outrageous things. Honestly, his Twitter feed's like a comedy. It's hilarious. Some of the shit, like, you think the world doesn't work that way. Like, he's got the problem. Do you know what it looks to me like? He's got no actual experience, like no life experience. He's never been to and seen what drugs do to people. Because he's a lot of things. If he could, he would legalize drug use. He would.
Yeah.
For sure. When I see certain things, like I've seen someone get stabbed in a park over drugs when I was 15 years old. You see a lot of things, and that's why when you look at comments like that he's made, the drug dealers are essentially elders looking after the community. But no,
there are David Leyenholm in the Senate and other people in the LDP put out some pretty good questions. I think we need to think about banning things and criminalizing things, because when you do that, you create a black market and then you can't control it. Okay. So there is a reasonable argument for legalizing some drugs. That'll actually bring it under close to public scrutiny and you probably have less use of it. That's one side of the argument. So I'm open to that debate, but it's got to be done very, very properly. Not a lot like he's doing it. And you're never going to have a drug lord who's going to be the representative for the community and the judiciary for the community. I mean, that's complete rubbish. That's nonsense. No. And that's the problem we have, Chris, because if you saw some of the Greens election campaigns, and remember they had a very successful election campaign. Mm. They've got more members in the lower house. They've got more members in the Senate. There was one video, TikTok video of somebody dancing above Parliament House. You know, they had a picture of Canberra's Parliament House and somebody dancing above it. And Adam Band looking up with a vague look on his face. That was it. No message, no words. That was it. What kind of people does that appeal to?
Yeah, I don't know. Brain dead.
Yeah, exactly.
The issue with drugs is one that I think there's many different, there's a lot of variables, but I think, you know, there's, when we're talking about drug use, look, I don't believe cannabis should be decriminalized for sure. But then you look at drugs like marijuana and you go, okay, well, but then you look at drugs like heroin or methamphetamine and you start thinking, well, okay, well, you don't really want that legalized in any capacity. But marijuana, sure. Because, you know, a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs do more damage to the community than black market drugs will ever do, ever. If you look at the US, their opioid epidemic, now it's fentanyl. It was Oxycontin, now it's fentanyl. They've got huge problems over there on legal drugs that are prescribed by doctors and fulfilled by pharmacies. So, you know, opioids, painkillers, some benzodiazepines are much more dangerous and harmful to the community than marijuana would ever be. So,
well, let's talk about medical cannabis, because we're very, very strong supporters of medical cannabis. Very strong supporters. It's a wonderful product. It's entirely natural. There are no side effects for most people at all. Not only that, you can't overdose on it. You can stuff yourself so full of medical cannabis that you still wouldn't have any problems. Whereas opioids, you can die. Yeah. And the opioids are addictive, whereas medical cannabis is not. So there's a separate argument from marijuana compared with medical cannabis, but they're both worth looking at. Medical cannabis, we're entirely sold.
Yeah.
That's it. And we're keeping the two separate at the moment because most people are not ready for the decriminalization of marijuana because of the THC in it, right? The psychotropic effects. But medical cannabis, it's used by a lot of people in this country, and it should be much, much cheaper and much more readily available. It should be readily available at least by prescription from a chemist, at least. And the reason it's not, Chris, is because Big Pharma. Big Pharma controls the health department at state and federal level. It controls many of the doctors, it controls the doctors' guilds, the doctors' associations. And what they do is that they're seeking continued profits. Medical cannabis is useful for so many things. In the 1930s, I read somewhere it was the number one prescribed medicine. All right, number one. It was in the doctor's almanac. It was taken out because Big Pharma wanted to produce its toxins. And medical cannabis cannot be patented because it's natural.
That's right.
So that means if you can't patent it, your costs, you'll never be able to charge outrageous prices for it. And yet it's effective, it's safe, and it's affordable and accessible. I mean, it's perfect. That's why it's not wanted by Big Pharma. And that's why Big Pharma keeps the government outlawed.
That's right. I don't know about Australia. I don't know about Australia, but I know in the US, a lot of the anti-cannabis campaigns, TV campaigns and whatnot, were funded by pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
That's exactly, they don't want that because you think about the conditions. I mean, depression, I get anxiety, insomnia. Yeah. You know, instead of sleeping pills, people just have medicinal cannabis. There's so many.
Post-traumatic stress.
Your post-traumatic stress, cancer for pain. But you know what's interesting as well, I've been looking into it a bit recently, is the use of certain, I can't think of the actual name of it now, but the mushrooms, micro doses of mushrooms that they're giving to, retired military personnel in the US to help with their PTSD. It's working wonders.
It's also being used In some countries. I think in the United States, I know some doctors who are involved with it, working wonders with mental health issues. Really very, very effective. Very effective. And so we need to advocate more for at least experimental use of them right now. There are people, I can put you in touch with people in this country who are actually using it therapeutically right now.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sure it happens. It's you know, we need, Australia is quite far behind, especially behind the US when it comes to, you know, experimenting with drugs that were, you know, frowned upon for so many years. And it's working wonders. And I think, I don't know how much influence the pharmaceutical companies have here. Well, I know they've got a fair bit considering what we've been through over the last few years, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of talk. I know the Greens do support that, but I think they support recreational use, don't they?
Yes. And what we want to do is we want to separate those two for now, because we want to get medicinal cannabis into people's hands cheaply, readily. We want to make that more widespread. So most people are open to that, but they're not open to recreational use. So rather than stop the use of both, because by pushing both, we just want to push at the moment medical cannabis. We look at the other one later. Put it aside for now. Let's get medical cannabis into people's hands and into people's bodies.
Would you say it's a generational thing where, because I don't know many people at all that are around my age that would oppose the legalization of recreational marijuana use.
I think maybe
religious people, but the average person, I don't think they care too much.
No, I don't think it is a generational thing. We know of a lot of Army veterans or Defence Force veterans. We know a lot of older people who have got, you know, things that come on with age. They love medicinal cannabis. They think it's fabulous. I think over 1 million people use it, but we've got to make it much easier.
It's quite expensive, isn't it? I think at the moment to get it.
Yep, and it shouldn't be. We could have with our clean environment in this country, we could be supplying medical cannabis all over Asia. It would be a huge, and cannabis, you know, hemp produces. I mean, hemp. Then we've also got cannabis producing food. I mean, really good food, textiles. So it's a wonderful, wonderful crop. We could get that into Australia, then that would be and it is coming in certain places. They're already growing hemp. They're growing medical cannabis, but it's just not widespread yet. But there are some people who are trying to do battle with all the bureaucrats and the regulators, and they're making progress. And we've been supporting them, and we've got a few more things planned.
Do you know Dr. Catalaris? You heard of Dr. Catalaris? He was known as Dr. Pot.
No.
So he's an Australian doctor who was, charged in the 90s for supplying and helping children and also breast cancer, people with breast cancer, to with medicinal cannabis back in the 90s.
Which state?
New South Wales.
Okay, we know of a couple of Queensland doctors who've helped people enormously, especially epileptics.
Yeah, well, he was doing it in the 90s and actually reversed breast cancer in many women that he was treating, and also helped children that were in pain with medicinal cannabis. So done great work. He did an interview, I think, on 60 Minutes or something like that, and then a few days later, apparently the feds kicked in his door and got hold of him, and he was he had history with Dr. Kerry Chant then in regards to what happened then. Yeah, so he had his medical license taken and was actually sent to jail pending his court hearing, and he represented himself and used the basis of medical necessity, and he was walked out free, as he should.
Well, what's changed, mate? What's changed now? The medical, no, I shouldn't say that. The health departments are telling doctors what to say and what not to say. They've completely smashed the doctor-patient relationship. That's sacrosanct. The Greeks developed that 3,000 years ago. That's been smashed.
Absolutely.
We're destroying, freedom of choice with what goes in regard, what's informed consent. We're destroying informed consent. We're mandating things. I mean, this is not right. It's not human. And this is what our country has descended into.
Yeah,
what we're fighting against.
There's too much government involvement in our lives. And a buddy of mine only a few weeks ago was fined for fishing without a license. And I thought, know what? Obviously, I know you're a part of it, but no politician has the right to tell another human being that they're not allowed to fish. It is our basic human right to fish.
I agree. And who's pushing for that? United Nations.
Yeah.
They're trying to lock up. We have the largest continental shelf fishing zone in the world. Mm. We have a tiny population by world standards of 25, 26 million people. That's it.
Yeah.
We should be exporting seafood hand over fist all over the planet. We import 3/4 of the seafood we consume.
Yeah.
How the hell does that happen? I'll tell you how it happens. We have 36% of the world's marine parks in our country. Some of them are controlled on behalf of the UN by our state and federal governments. Some are controlled directly by the UN. China has 1.4 billion people. What's that? I'm guessing that's around 60 times what we have.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
They have a tiny coastline compared to ours. Where do we? Who's our biggest exporter of fish into seafood into this country? China.
Oh, Thailand would be close to China, wouldn't it? There's a lot of
Thailand is second. Thailand has a tiny coastline compared to ours, a population that's about 3 times ours. Yet they export. They're the second biggest importer of fish into our country. How can that be? The fish don't say, "Oh, we better look after Australian waters here. We'll stay out of Australian waters. We'll go to Thailand waters." Bullshit.
The Taiwanese
and the Chinese say, Thais and Chinese say that to the United Nations because they have a country to feed. Yeah. What we've done here is the Greens, the Labor, the Liberal, and the Nationals have sold out our fishing industry. We used to have a vibrant fishing industry, not anymore.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't John West originally Australia, I'm trying to think of it, the old cans of salmon and tuna, John West.
I don't know where John West was, but I know that our last tuna cannery was packed up, dismantled, packed up, and sent to Thailand back in 2010. Sydney, I was told by old timers, Sydney had lots of canneries, seafood canneries.
Yep.
We had a vibrant fishing industry. It's been gutted because of UN regulations. What's that done to the price of fish? What's that done to the quality of fish? What's that done to your choice, your freedom?
Oh, the quality of fish at the moment, I don't know about up there, but in New South Wales, try getting a nice piece of barramundi. You can tell they're all farmed. Yeah, they got that muddy taste to the farmed barramundi. You can't get any fresh barramundi. It's almost, around where I am, impossible.
See, this is the UN affecting our energy, UN affecting our water, UN controlling our food, controlling our transport, controlling our movement. What they want to do is control our identity, control what we spend, how we spend it through digital identity, which is a product of the World Economic Forum. The Liberal Party introduced legislation before the election, and they've copied parts of that from the World Economic Forum's digital platform project. Copied and pasted it into our legislation. I mean, this is what's happening to our country. That's why we've got to speak, and that's why it's so important to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, we need to continue to have these conversations. And, you know, I have tried many times to have people on the other side of the debate on for a chat. And I'll be completely, even if I don't agree with them, there's some things you say that I don't agree with, probably some things I say you don't agree with. That's fine. But you always allow the opportunity of the other person to speak and get their point across. And I'm happy to do that. Just the other day, I wanted Mike Carlton to come on and have a chat about a few things that he was saying. And I said something about his best mate, Peter Fitzsimons. And I got a message just last night from Mike Carlton in my inbox saying, fuck off, dickhead. And then blocked me. So
let me tell you a story about Mike Carlton. I'll see if I can remember. It was a few years ago. There was a journalist called Ben Cubby. He was at the Sydney Morning Herald, and he was their chief environmental reporter. Got that? He was the head of their environmental reporting. So Ben called me up and said, can I interview you about this before I got into the Senate, about your stance on climate? And I said, sure. And I gave him a whole lot of stuff. In the middle of that, I said, do you know about the IPCC, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change? No. No clue. Here he is, the environmental reporter on the single biggest issue supposedly in the environment. He didn't know about that body. So I told him a few things. He made a story. Now, it's a long, long time ago, probably 7 or 8 years ago. He made a story and he published it. It wasn't that offbeat, but it talked about me being a director of a company. I wasn't. It talked about me doing other things. It tried to frame me as a bit of a coal producer. You know, I wasn't. I'm very keen and supportive of coal, oil, gas, and nuclear and hydroelectricity because they're the cheapest forms of electricity. And what else did he do? Oh, that's right. Then Mike Carlton came out and said I was anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic? I mean, I was at the time, I was a volunteer on the Galileo movement, which was founded by a man whose wife was Jewish and who was, as a 2.5-year-old, escaped from the Holocaust concentration camps. She's a Hungarian Jew, a lovely, lovely lady. A lot of my friends are Jewish. I'm not at all. I was at a bloody protest in support of Israel where the Greens were hammering the Israeli companies in this country. I was standing up for the Jews. And Mike Carlton came out and said I was anti-Semitic. I mean, what a lying bastard.
I think they just throw labels on people. I don't think there's any thought. They just chuck a label on you to you know, maybe it could just be for, you know, look, undoubtedly it's so people look at you in a particular way. So anything you say after that point, people will just ignore, right? That's why they label people anti-vaxxer, what you were referred to, climate denier. I got called, and this is something I'll because a lot of people have agreed, a lot of people have disagreed with my point, but I made a point the other day to, I'll tell you who she is now, because it ended up as a nightmare on Twitter. Twitter's good, isn't it? I'll tell you what. There was, I'll tell you, his doctor, she's down, I think, in South Australia. An Indigenous woman. Oh, I'm trying to find her now. Where is she? Here we go. Dr. Tracy Westerman. You familiar? No?
No.
So anyway, she said something about how come when, you know, people ask if you're Italian, Greek, you tell someone you're Italian and Greek, people go, oh, okay. But when you tell people you're Indigenous, they say, okay, but how much? Like, you know, how Indigenous are you?
Right? I've never thought of that, and no one's ever told me that.
That's what she said. And I said, to her, look, in my own experience, because this, I've seen it happen, is that people will claim they're Indigenous, even if they'd never mentioned it before in their life. I knew someone who did it for, they had a dental campaign where I don't know if it was a federal or state funded dental program, but Indigenous Australians got some free dental work done. This is about 10 years ago now. And a friend of mine claimed that he was Indigenous for that, for free dental work. There's another person I know whose great-great-grandfather was Indigenous. It's actually a distant family member. So I know exactly who she is, and I know her family. She claimed that so she could get housing. She got into a public housing in about 6 weeks, while I know people that have been waiting for 5 years. And that was my point, is that a lot of people, unfortunately, say that or claim it for their own personal gain. She went off saying it was weaponized language.
Well, wait until she gets hold of Nampa Jimpa Price in the Senate. You know, most people know as Jacinda Price. Her full name is Nampa Jimpa Price. Man, what a wonderful senator she's going to be. She, I don't know if you've listened to her first speech. Wow. She put the facts out there. She is just a wonderful human being. She is just so lovely to have in the Senate. She doesn't hang back. She's just great. And, you know, she's in the Liberal Party, but where credit's deserved, I give credit. And Nampa Jimpa Price deserves heaps of credit. She's going to change that parliament just by telling the truth on Indigenous.
She's upsetting the left.
Beautiful.
At the moment. She's upsetting the left. What she was saying the other day. But Pete, again, that's that same guy I was telling you about, Pete Fitzsimmons interviewed her.
Hopeless.
And apparently was quite rude, and I think she said that she felt bullied by him.
Yeah. I can't imagine anyone bullying Nampa Jimpa.
I don't know. I did see the speech, but I don't know much about her. But that's what we need, though. We need a voice where, because I think we all know deep down there's a lot of stuff that's going on at the moment that we know is bullshit.
Yeah,
we know that. But people are just too afraid to say that because of the backlash they cop.
Well, we've been calling out, you know, and the worst thing you can call an Australian woman is racist, right? And that's what they've done with Pauline. And you just said you're caught given labels at times. I'm given labels, climate denier and all that. Whenever they give you a label, it means they can't argue with you. Yeah. It means they haven't got the facts and they can't string their facts into a logical argument. So they resort to a label. So when people give me a label, I just say, well, thank you very much, Chris, for giving me that label. It means you haven't got an argument. So thank you. I've just won the debate. See ya.
Yeah.
And that's they can't give Nampa Jimpa Price a label. They can give Pauline a label, but it doesn't shut Pauline down. It won't shut me down because we know what they're doing. That Pauline has been fighting so hard for the Aboriginals in this country and the Torres Strait Islanders. When I was first elected into the Senate in 2016, I was walking up to One Nation headquarters in Albion at the time, and three Aboriginals from the territory saw me. And so they walked up and said, where's Pauline's office? And I said, in this building, come with me. And I said, what are you doing down here from the territory? And they said, well, she's the only one who gets it. She's the only one who stands up for us. She's the only one who knows what's going on. And you know, we've been calling out the Aboriginal industry because the Aboriginal industry is feeding $30 billion a year into an industry from taxpayer money, and it's not getting to the people in the communities. It's we made a list of something like, oh, how many? There are dozens and dozens and dozens of Aboriginal groups that are not serving the people. The people on the communities, the Aboriginal communities, are languishing and they're not getting the money. The money's going to black and white consultants, black and white lawyers. It's going to a whole industry. You know, as some of the Aboriginals in the Territory said, you talk about a housing project to build houses. Most of the bloody money goes on white contractors. When the Aboriginals could develop a skill and build the bloody houses themselves and have greater ownership, why is that being neglected? That's not help.
No, it's appalling. And you know what? You see it with a lot of other minorities. You see that they'll be used for political gain or for many other reasons. And that's what we're seeing at the moment. That topic at the referendum that's going to be put out for the Indigenous voice. I don't agree with it only because I think that, you know, we need to come together as one now. This division, it needs to stop. It's unnecessary. We're one country. And I just think it does more harm than good, especially in the long term.
You're exactly correct. It also says something else too. Currently, around about 5 or 6% of federal senators and MPs identify as Indigenous, right? 5 or 6%. When you look at the number in there, out of the total number of 227 representatives, 5 or 6% are Indigenous. The Indigenous population is 3%. They're already overrepresented. So aren't they really saying that the Aboriginal representatives in Parliament are not doing their job?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, isn't it? Well, that's what they are saying.
Yeah, that's right. So that is like the whites in Aboriginal in Parliament. They're not doing their job either because they're following the party power brokers' instructions. They're not representing the people. They're following the party power brokers' instructions. The other thing it does is, I agree with you, we are one nation or one country, whatever term you want to use, and it separates into two. That's not good. But the third thing it does is really insidious. The Greens are very, very damaging with this one. They create victims.
Yeah.
They create classes of people, and they say, Chris, you're being demoralized. You're a victim. And then that destroys your sense of responsibility, destroys your initiative, and you become a victim forever. That's what the Greens do, and to some extent, the modern Labor Party does that. The old Labor Party used to be about standing up together, united by all means, but at least standing up. And the Greens create victims to get votes, and in the process, they destroy lives. So the Greens are about looking good, not doing good. And the Greens, actually, that's why I keep saying they're inhuman, because they're destroying lives. They're creating perpetual victims and saying, you're this or you're that, or you're a single parent, or you're a Aboriginal, or you're a Torres Strait Islander. No, you're Australian. If you've got particular concerns, let's hear about them. But don't talk to me about my skin color or my, you know, all short people need more money, Chris.
You know what? It's the virtue signaling and just the, like, Coles have now announced they're going to put a welcome to country on their receipts. What, I don't understand that. Why? Like, why don't you do more for the community? Like, Coles have, and I looked at this last night, Coles have 112,000 employees. I think it was 1,800 or 1,600 of those employees are Indigenous. So how about you do more there? If that's your concern, how about you do that? How about you employ more Indigenous Australians? How about you, because you know what? I love my children. They have at the school, they have, Indigenous, NAIDOC, we have all these things. And I'm all for that because I think we can all learn a lot from Indigenous Australians. The way that they, like, they're, in regards to their connection with the land, unmatched. And I find it very interesting. And I'm all for my kids learning a bit more about culture. There's no problem with that. But it's this pushing it down your throat all the time.
Yep.
That gets to me.
Well, let me give you a little example of something. We've got an excellent barrister in our office, and I asked him to research the Native Title Act, which came in under Keating, I think it was, right? Now, all of us whiteys think that the Native Title Act was brought in to give Aboriginals some land. Bullshit. The Native Title Act of Parliament, Federal Parliament, the preamble to it, the introduction to it, is littered with the words United Nations. If you go to an Aboriginal community like we have in Cape York, Northern Territory, they cannot get access to land. If you cannot get access to land, how the hell do you get money to borrow to pay for a house? How the hell do you get money to start a small business? What the Native Title Act was about locking up the land, taking your land, pretending to give it to the Aboriginals, but not. And so it was about locking up the land. Where did it come from? United Nations. So it's
what,
about
what year
stealing
was that?
Land.
What year was that?
Oh, Keating. When was Keating in power?
No idea. That's why
I asked. 93, 96, somewhere around there.
Well, the mid-90s, somewhere there.
Yeah, so early to mid-90s. So, you know, this is what's going on, and people aren't aware of that. And we all sit back and think, well, we've the virtue signalers said, we've done our job. We've given the Aboriginals land. Bullshit. Go to an Aboriginal community and talk to them. They will tell you they can't get the land. And they will also tell you the Aboriginal industry is stopping the money flowing from the taxpayers to the Aboriginal in the community. Torres Strait Islander, we were up there last year. I said, what do you think about close the gap? Because to me, it's a negative because you're focusing on the negative, right? Closing a gap. Mm. And he said, it's bullshit. And you'll never close the gap while ever we have a close the gap program.
That's
what
right.
What do you mean? Yeah, of course it is, but I was wanting to know. So I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, who do you think makes money out of having a close the gap program? All the people supposed to be on these programs for closing the gap. If they close the gap, they won't get the money. They're not interested in closing the gap. It's that simple. It's been turned into an industry that is hurting the Aboriginals in the communities. That's what we object to. And Pauline has been calling that out since 96.
Yeah, see, it comes from, that's what I mean. There's people that will label you and Pauline and as racist and all the rest of the terms that they use.
Nazis.
Nazis. If you have to speak, like, because if what you say, if you just make a point and you just read that in passing, it may look that way. But, you know, you have the way you explain it and the way that you, and not just you, but Pauline as well, it's very clear to anyone that listens that it comes from a good place and that, in fact, you're probably doing more for that community than what the other people are. And that you're actually standing up and speaking for them. But it's the same thing. Like the minute you even suggest that you'll vote no to the referendum for the Indigenous voice, the comments will flood in about you being racist. You're like, well, I'm not racist. That's irrelevant. What do you mean I'm racist? Because I'm objecting to a particular issue. But people just can't. Well, I mean, people, I mean, let's be honest, primarily the left. They just see it and run with it.
And that's well, I don't call them the left. I don't call them the left. I call them the control side of politics, because there's no left and right are meaningless terms these days. I know what you're saying, and most people can understand a broad group by the left, but there's so many people on the left economically who are on the right when it comes to morals or values, and vice versa. It's an irrelevant term, and I realized I was reading a book one day about 10, 15 years ago, and I realized the left and right are used to confuse people. The real terms are you're either in favor of control or you're in favor of freedom. And the real issue throughout humanity has been control versus freedom. Labor Party's in favor of controls. Greens are in favor of controls. So what you call the left broadly, in favor of controls. UN is in favor of controls. And that's been the entire battle in humans. It's a battle within each of us, you know, whether we want to control someone else. It's a battle between two of us. Who's going to control? It's a battle between a group. It's a battle within a community. It's a battle within a nation. It's a battle between nations. That's what's caused most wars. So it's that ego again that comes up. That's what the core issue is with humans, the control element, the fear-based element. People who want to control, always beneath control is fear. So it's whether or not we let our fears take over and control others, try to control others, or we let our spirit come through and then we're of the universe. You're not a part of the universe, you're of the universe. But the way we create ourselves and fabricate the ego that I call Malcolm, I'm part of the universe, whereas I'm really of the universe. And I think we've got to get back to that holistic thinking, which means that unified thinking, which universal thinking, which means you don't have a voice for Aboriginals. You have a voice for the people of Australia. That's it. And what we've got to get back to is that, because at the moment we have a voice for the Liberal Party, a voice for the Labor Party, a voice for the National Party, although that's pretty weak, and a voice for the Greens. They're all speaking for the UN. David Little Proud is the leader of the Nationals. He's trying to push forward globalist policies. One of the last things he did as a National Party minister was introduce a bill on biodiversity, which is complete bullshit. It was about controlling land in the guise of giving money to farmers for that control. I mean, they're coming at us in every which way they can, Chris. We've just got to be so much on guard. But I think we've got to get back to being individuals within a human species that's of our universe, rather than looking at separation and fragmentation.
Right. Well said. We'll end it there on that. That was exactly right. You're exactly right. And, you know, I heard something a few weeks ago, and they said that in the video, he said that we were controlled by freedom. That we're being controlled by freedom. And then, you know, once, you know, cryptocurrency and people, you know, had the internet, they started talking like we're doing here and bouncing ideas off each other. They lost a little bit of that control. So the shift now is they're trying to control us with safety, which is exactly what they're doing. Like in the last 3 years, how many viruses have popped up out of nowhere? How many? Coronavirus, monkeypox. Now there's a new one in China where there was 31 cases identified of a brand new virus. It's just one after the next.
Foot and mouth in Bali.
Foot and mouth, that's right. It's just
that one's real.
Yeah, and that's very concerning, that one. Mm. Very, very concerning. But anyway, I know where you have another meeting at 12, so we'll leave it there. But Malcolm, always a pleasure.
Yeah, same here, Chris. And keep doing what you're doing, mate, because we can't rely on the Mockingbird media, the anti-social media, the legacy media, the charlatan media. We've got to rely upon people like you to get the truth out. So thank
absolutely.
You.
And keep is your TNT radio, is that a long – what's your vision for that? Are you doing that for the foreseeable future or
– Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Every 2 weeks on a Saturday from 3 to 5. And okay. Thanks for mentioning it, tntradio.live. Wonderful, wonderful global Australian, actually, but they have hosts in New York, Los Angeles, Tel Aviv, Belfast Island, London, all over Australia. And they have journalists during the week and people who've come from prominent positions. We've got ex-former CIA, senior people in the CIA on there. And then on the weekends, they tend to have people like me, and we take our turns. So every second week, every second Saturday, 3 to 5, I'm on. But TNT was funded by a person who wants to change politics in this country and change journalism, bring it back to basics and honesty. And by a journalist who's Mike Ryan, who's doing a wonderful job. What they're doing is that they're just saying to the media, here's some honesty. And they're saying to the media, here's the real politics. So they're reporting fearlessly on any topic. They just tell the truth. As they say, the only thing that TNT mandates is the truth.
Yeah, that's what it's, we need to have that. And that's why I have no problem recommending your show on TNT Radio, because we need to work together collectively. Because you know what that's going to do? Yep. It's going to pressure the mainstream media to hopefully start being a little bit more honest. Because people are going to get sick of it. And I've already noticed that people are getting sick of the mainstream media. People know that the mainstream media lie. And I think it's a lack of awareness that, you know, podcasts like mine and shows like yours exist. But I think people are really starting to see that now. And it's going to force the mainstream media to change. And because, mate, if the mainstream media change and they're more, you know, forthcoming and truthful with their reporting, everyone wins. Everyone wins. So it doesn't bother me if I promote your show, and it doesn't. But we're all in it together collectively. It's a collective effort.
Yep.
But anyway, Malcolm.
Anyway, I meant what I said. Keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate that, mate. All the best.
See you, mate.